Hi, I'm Weston Labar with Cargomatic, and welcome to another episode of People on the Move. We're here today with Max Vekich, the newest commissioner from the Federal Maritime Commission. We're super honored to have him here today because there's so many important things that the FMC is doing right now in our supply chain industry. Max, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about your background. Tell our listeners a little bit about what you're working on.
Thanks, Weston. I am actually the only commissioner from the West Coast. I'm originally from a little port called Aberdeen, Washington, which was also home to Kurt Cobain. So that's my claim to fame.
I like that fun fact.
Yeah. And, and more, I could tell you more about him at another time. But, anyway. And I became more or less a refugee from the spotted owl controversy and timber. And we mainly exported logs from my port. And, after Endangered Species Act issues, that cargo went away. And so got seriously restricted. So I went to Seattle, became a Marine clerk, and, I moved containers and learned all about it, relearned everything. But so did manual labor until I was 49 years old, and then I became a clerk. And then I got really smart because the clerks tell everybody, we're the brains of the waterfront union. So anyway, and then longshore is a muscle. So it was kind of fun going from muscle to brain, but my back, it really was thankful. I broke my back twice in the job, so it was time to do other things.
Tell everybody the story about how you got to the Federal Maritime Commission, because I think that that's fascinating. I think it's great that we have somebody who has literal hands-on experience and how our ports work and movement of cargo, literally from the dock. So tell everybody a little bit about how you ended up on the commission, because it's a fascinating story.
Well, thanks a lot. It's kind of a Cinderella story. And I'm 2022 would have been my 50th year on the waterfront. And I'm thinking, well, it's been a great, great run, but maybe I'll think about doing something else. And the contract, the West Coast Longshore contract's coming up. Maybe after July 1st, I could retire. And that was my thought. But this port congestion thing was going on. COVID was going on. I worked with five people who ended up dying of COVID. And we kept going to work. Longshore workers kept going to work. Truck drivers kept coming to work. There was a lot of buzz around supply chain congestion. And it seemed to me that there are a lot of people that were not getting it right on the media. And there are a lot of people not getting it right, in interpreting what was the real problem. And I thought to myself, it's too bad they don't have somebody with some experience with operations who's actually moved cargo in the government. President Biden, yes, he could use that right now. And and I got to say, if it had been President Obama, who I really liked, I wouldn't have had this thought because, he's a professor type and he likes academics. But Joe Biden, more of a blue collar guy. I wrote him a letter after the election and offered my services and said, I got 50 years in the waterfront and I've moved some cargo. And I think that's what you need right now. More people like me who have a good clue about how to do things operationally. When the president was saying, we got to open the terminals 24/7 and, talk to the big box companies about opening warehouses and truck companies about providing transportation. I know there are so many obstacles and hoops that would entail, but it's the waterfront worker's fantasy 24/7. I buy into the dream, even though I know it's really hard, if not impossible, to pull it off. But hey, I'm in. I did my best. So I wrote a letter to the president about this position on the Federal Maritime Commission, and I'll be darned. Next thing you know, I'm talking to my U.S. senator. One's the three-term governor of the state of Washington. One's lieutenant governor, Denny Heck, Jay Inslee. And the two senators, Patty Murray and Rhea Cantwell, you know, I was there. I was there with them, and they would call me up after I left office and the state legislature, and kind of like free input or free advice, or, hey, you know, I was the longshoreman they knew. So they would ask me about things, and I would validate them or say, yeah, this is great, or that's not great. And of course, I'm always beating the drum about infrastructure. I said, you know, we need more docks, we need more roads, we need more bridges, we need better rail. So that was all part of my mantra. And but the number one thing I learned on the docks was, well, first, you learn good on the payroll. Second, you learn you got to keep the cargo hook moving. And was the work ethic that I was raised with. And the people I had started off with really knew how to move cargo. And coming to this FMC, it seems like there's a lot of people that have ideas about this, that, or the other thing, but we're still going to have to move cargo the old-fashioned way, one or two containers at a time, till we get out of this mess. And so I offered my services to the president, and I got a call. I had it when I called one of my senators, Senator Cantwell. She said to me in dock language, she thought it was a great idea. So
that's awesome. Yeah. And thank you. You know, I always say our industry is the most essential industry. Nothing can happen without the supply chain working and working at a very high level. Right. And the work that was done during COVID, you know, I always say this, thank you, healthcare workers. They obviously did a lot of great things. They did the yeoman's work as it relates to doing their part to try to cure people and keep people healthy. But they couldn't have done it without the longshoremen moving cargo in and out of the country. A lot of PPE came in. They couldn't do it without the truckers picking it up and delivering it to hospitals and clinics throughout the country. And, you know, the hard work from the men and women in the supply chain, from the dock worker to the trucker and all points in between, they're the reason that we've got through this pandemic, and they're the reason that we've got the best economy in the world, right? And people don't realize it, but having a high functioning supply chain means that you can have very efficient and successful businesses and a high quality of life. And so the work that you did, your colleagues did, it should not be underscored at all. It is extremely important to the fabric of how we recovered from the pandemic. And, you know, my background working with the trucking community, I just think what we do is so important. And when we do it well, nobody thinks about us. But when we have issues like we had during the pandemic or during big periods of congestion due to large cargo coming in, whether it's a peak season or one of the many, many once in a lifetime anomalies I've dealt with in the last 10 years, we need to figure out how to do things better. And I'd want to transition a little bit because you step into the Federal Maritime Commission and OSRA's passed, right? The Ocean Shipping Reform Act, the biggest piece of legislation in our industry really since the Shipping Act of 1983. There were some tweaks in the late 90s, but really this is a wholesale evaluation and modernization of how we do things in the supply chain. And at the very root of it is what the FMC's role is going to be. And talk a little bit about OSRA and coming into the FMC, and really at a time where the FMC is reemerging as an important regulatory body that for many years it wasn't. But under the leadership of Dan Maffei, and you have, I think, a five-star commission, as I was saying earlier, with now you added to folks like Carl Bensel and Rebecca Dye and Commissioner Sola, you guys really are digging in and doing your work. So talk a little bit about what that experience has been, and talk a little bit about OSRA and you know, what you guys are doing to make sure that this once in a lifetime opportunity doesn't slip through your fingers.
OSRA, yeah. Ocean Shipping Reform Act. Yeah, it's been decades, about time. Bipartisan solution from Congress to get in the game. And we're the agency, we're the expert agency that's supposed to keep track of and supposed to referee the ongoing relationships between shippers and carriers. And the shippers tend to be Americans, the carriers tend to be international. So, you know, it's an interesting line we walk, but for a few years there, I think we turned a blind eye to enforcement. And the commission that currently, as currently constructed, we're all in on enforcement, and people want to see the commission do their job, who work here, and it's about time. And we've removed some of the little internal obstacles that, said things had to be done repeatedly before we can enforce and take action. We're trying to remove those obstacles so we can streamline the process, so shippers have better access to the wheels of justice here. And
you bring up something important, and I just want to say I couldn't agree with you more on these points. When I was CEO of the Harbor Trucking Association, I met with a former commissioner. I think I shared this story with you once before, but he said, "Why are you here on behalf of industry asking me to regulate? I'm a deregulator." And I said, "Normally, I'm all in support of deregulation on different things. However, we've tried to solve this from an industry perspective. And the unfortunate thing is the haves don't want the have-nots to have an equal seat at the table. And the industry has changed so much since 1983 that we need to actually figure out how to govern our industry and create a set of rules that everybody can play by and everybody can win if they're playing by those rules." And that's not the situation, obviously, that we've had over the last decade or so since the creation of things like appointments and the divesting of chassis by the ocean carriers, and even in many cases, the ocean carriers selling the terminals to private equity, and they operate as independent businesses. And maybe the biggest of all, the shipping alliances, which brings me to the next point, because there's a very important bill in Congress right now. There's a couple, but I think the most important is the Garamundi bill, which would reestablish the regulatory powers, if you will, of the FMC. A lot of people don't realize that when antitrust situations come before the FMC, and we talked a little bit about this with your colleague Carl Bensel not that long ago, but you guys don't actually have the ability to give it the thumbs up or the thumbs down. You guys have the opportunity to review it, and I believe it's a 30-day review, and if you don't have any issues, you let it fly through, and if you do, you hire the attorneys and you go after them. The Garamundi bill would give you the ability to say yes or no and be a little bit more involved in what that process is, which is the same rights afforded to every other regulatory agency. So talk a little bit about what the importance of that would be to the FMC, because obviously we are in an interesting time with the 2M announcing that they're going to split. People don't know what the future of alliances are going to be. You have a lot of different entities throughout the supply chain who have overcome issues around vertical integration and whatnot with strange bedfellow agreements, if you will. So talk a little bit about what that really means, not just to the FMC and the ability for you to do your job, but how that reverberates through the industry.
It's a 45-day.
45-day. Sorry, I don't know why I said 30.
That's okay. I mean, well, there's a bunch of 30s running around here within our agency bouncing around. I'm not sure where they're going to land yet. So we're doing in the middle of the rulemaking on OSRA. So, we're in the weeds in this stuff. And one of the things you're going to see is the charge complaint process is a real process now. And that's proving quite popular. Shippers are really taking advantage of that. And, everywhere I go, I say, "Hey, do not overlook this tool. It is the best thing that's come your way in a long time, and you'll get action." And I think as a result of the volume of complaints and concerns and cases filed, the industry's changed. The carriers have changed. They don't necessarily want to spend a lot of money on lawyers and now the hubris is gone from their side to some large extent. It's not totally gone, but that's okay. That's okay. We need a level playing field, allegedly, but are playing fields in capitalism ever really level? I mean, there's always the big guys that have more power. It's just an economy of scale issue. So anyway, kind of went off into the woods.
All good. I think what you're saying is the ability to actually evaluate what that economy of scale looks like and the impact to the little guy, as you were talking earlier, provides you a unique opportunity that today you just don't have.
That's right. And the burden of proof, we've shifted it. The carriers have to prove they're innocent, more or less, instead of the shippers having to do all the work and having to have the onerous legal bills. Now, Congressman Garamundi and previously Congressman Johnson, one Democrat, one Republican, had been really the fathers of the shipping OSRA 22. And when we were there to sign OSRA 22 into law with the president, and I was in the room, you know, they both said to me, we want to do more. We want to do more. This is a start. And I was thinking, well, it's a start, but boy, we haven't had anything at all done for so many decades. Now, this might be one and done, but Congressman Garamendi especially was very interested in doing more. Our agency does lack the ability, and we are the expert industry on supply chain and maritime commerce, but we do lack the ability to adjudicate these issues internally and enforce things ourselves. We have to go out to outside to federal courts. And that's the start in our office that we wanted to change that. We wanted to bring the power inside like any other federal agency. Because frankly, the FMC is being tasked with one of the biggest responsibilities in the federal government right now. And, you know, everybody has discovered us. JOC likes to talk about us, but okay, that's great. I talked to the White House and they asked me when I first came in, what did I think about what the FMC could handle? And I said, well, give us the power, we'll do it. That seems to be the attitude in this agency. It's very much a can-do agency, and we're serious about enforcing OSRA, and we're serious about bringing some much-needed refereeing and some much-needed, dispute resolution to the supply chain and to the parties. And that's, we're going to get involved, and we may throw a few elbows, we may break some eggs. Okay, we may wrap some knuckles, you know, at Catholic schools. So I don't know. That all might happen.
Yeah.
And it's happening. Fines have happened.
We've already seen a bit of a shift, right? It's not perfect by any sense of the imagination, but you've seen a change in attitude by many of the different parties and process, right? Attitude may be the wrong word, because a lot of times when you get to the right people, you can talk about these issues, but many times for the common small trucker or shipper, they're going through a process where they never get to talk to the right people, and thus they have to come to the FMC. So switch gears a little bit, because everybody thought that, or I think there's a narrative, I should say, that freight has left the West Coast because of the congestion people experienced in 2021 and beginning of 2022, and it's gone towards the East Coast, which we know then some of those ports dealt with some of the same issues. At one point in time, 109 ships waiting to get into LA Long Beach, and then they just moved them, 125 ships waiting to get into the confluence of East Coast ports from New York all the way down to Savannah. But really the issue was around uncertainty, right? And you brought it up earlier, but because you retired, the contract between the ILWU and the PMA expired last July, and fair or unfair, because I think we have seen very little disruption in the supply chain. There was a few little episodes recently around some local elections, but back on track, it seems, and there have been no issues. Other than, like I said, a few isolated ones, but the perception has become the reality. The perception of the shipper is no contract means my freight's going to get stuck somewhere and I'm not going to be able to get to it. Fear of lockouts or strikes, which I don't see happening, quite frankly. I don't think there was ever going to happen coming out of the pandemic. But your perspective I find super interesting, right? Because all that freight that would have gone through West Coast ports, and we'd probably still be unloading some of those ships given a massive amount of volume, it went to the East Coast, and some of it may stay there. A lot of it's going to come back, I do believe. Tell me a little bit about your perspective, because you were boots on the ground working through the last contract. And, you know, again, to me, it's about labor peace, right? And it's about conveying labor peace. And that, listen, you don't always agree between two parties, but if you have a willingness to get to agreement, that is what solves the problem.
And absolutely.
And I think the hope is that coming out of this contract negotiation, shippers may feel differently next time around, or maybe the two parties will maybe get to the table a little bit faster. And I know in the past that's happened as well. And they've extended the contracts or they've renegotiated them before they expire. So just talk a little bit about your experience and the role of, I think, labor peace as it relates to cargo on our West Coast waterfront.
You bet. Let's see, I started in 1972 and I retired in 2022. That's 50 years. I was never on strike. In the ILWU, I'm a 50-year participant in that contract. I never went on strike.
Never went on strike. I think that's an important thing to point out.
On strike. So a lot of the fear-mongering about the contract negotiations, I told anybody who would hear me, I bet the farm there's not going to be a strike. And we got the pandemic, we got port congestion. You know, a lot of the ILWU rank and file really liked Joe Biden because he got a start by a longshoreman who helped him in Delaware, a guy named Skinny Wilson. You can Google it. This whole story is there, and Joe Biden tells the story. So he understood what we did, and we had good relations, and there was no disconnect between this White House and the union. And so that's something that's really a refreshing. And we didn't have to retrain him, or the union didn't, and about negotiations. So, but no strike in 50 years. And, you know, this contract that expired in 2022 was a 3-year extension on top of a 5-year contract. So it's been 8 years since there's been any real negotiations. Back when we voted to or talked about the extension of the contract, I was one of the loudest voices on the West Coast to extend the contract. Thought, no, we needed things. This is pre-pandemic and cargo. We needed to provide stability and certainty. And so I thought the union was trying to do that by extending the contract. And and now since 2022, July 1, there's been no contract. So people are working without a contract. That's a good thing. And so the diversion of cargo, I think that's been a mistake. And I think it'll all come back, or the vast majority will come back. There's some European cargo, obviously, is probably makes more sense to go to the East Coast. At the end of the day, the West is still going to grow. The Pacific Rim is still really, really dynamic. And, you know, there's a lot of profits to be made there. And I suspect we're going to see a shift back to close to what it was previously after the contract's resolved. And I don't think that'll be too much longer. I think they have worked through a bunch of issues and, you know, I think they're getting closer.
Recent announcements certainly show that they've tackled big issues and that they've come to compromise and they've come to consensus on how to move forward. One question I think that's important, because again, you have a unique experience, the international, right? The coastal councils, they're working with the PMA's representatives to negotiate the contract. And then obviously it goes down to the locals for ratification. You want to just give our listeners a little bit of a oversight as to actually how this approval works, because I don't think a lot of people realize that there's a couple layers to this, and very important ones, because you have both the ILWU as an umbrella that is doing certain things at a macro level for its members, and then you have locals that have specific needs for their specific unique membership. And so talk a little bit about the role of the process and how that works.
Well, the union, the 60,000 members of the ILWU, you know, that's the umbrella organization is the ILWU, called the International. The contract is actually between the PMA and the ILWU. It's between the ILWU Coast Longshore Division. And that's just the longshore part and the marine clerk part of the union, which is a significant part, but it's not the majority. And probably about 12,000 folks, they are the ones who do the negotiating. They're run by what's called the Coast Committee, made up of the president, the vice president, and two Coast Committeemen. Now, interestingly enough, there's two from the north on that coast committee, Willie Adams and Cam Williams, and there's two from the south, Frank Ponce de Leon and Bobby Oliveira. And so, you know, the it might be a total reflection of commerce, but it is a reflection of political power on the West Coast, South and North together. Those are the four people that actually do the running of the division. And there's a negotiating committee made up of every part of the longshore part. So there's clerks, there's mechanics, there's longshore. From all the locals have a representative, and they serve on what's called the caucus. The negotiating committee refers back to the caucus. There's about 100 people in the caucus, and that's like the legislative body, the state assembly of the ILWU. And then there's a negotiating committee, and they're made up of probably about a little under 20, probably about 16, 18 people, including those four coast committeemen. And they're the ones that sit in the day-to-day negotiations with the opposites from the employer community. And Pacific Maritime Association is the employer representative. They are an employer association, but they also are the payroll agency. They also administer the benefits. So the welfare program and the pay is, that's who PMA is. The day-to-day operations though, that is the individual companies. And mm-hmm. And they have, not all of them are at the table, but a good number of them are at the table, and they.
And that's the shipping lines and the marine terminals, right?
Yeah, that's the carriers, the OOCLs, the Maersks, the Matson's one of the few American carriers out there. Posh is another American carrier. And the rest are mostly foreign, or OOCL, CMAs, Mediterranean. Well, you know them. Yep. You know them well. So, and we all know them well. So,
And thank you for that overview. The last question I have is, and we love to do this, we're getting our crystal ball out, because you are a federal maritime commissioner. And as much as I know you root for your brothers and sisters on the West Coast, getting that freight and moving that freight and creating more jobs, and no differently than I sit here in Long Beach and I always root for our West Coast ports to continue to grow, but Cargomatic's a national company. We want to see freight come into all of our ports. We want our customers to be doing well because there's consumers buying their products and they're importing and exporting products left and right because we service every port and rail ramp in the country. But what do you see for the rest of this year? Do you see an uptick in freight? Do you see things normalizing? Do you see a peak season? When do you see a contract? Just give us your, from Commissioner Max Vekich, what do you think the remainder of 2023 looks like?
Crystal ball, and it's worth what you pay for, I think there'll be a contract before the 4th of July. I think that there'll be a long period of labor peace like there had been. And I think a lot of the issues are going to be on a roadmap to long-term resolution. In the 1960s, this technology issue was up, and automation was before the union then, because the container had come onto the scene. And it was radically changing workers. Things were no longer going to be in sacks and on pallets. Well, if they were, they're going to be in a container. The sacks, the pallets, and the boxes. So they passed what was called the M&M Agreement in the 60s. And in return for the union shedding a lot of members over time, attrition, they got much more automated and used labor-saving devices. And at the same time, what the union got out of this was they got a promise for lifetime healthcare, womb to tomb, for all their members. To this day, that agreement's been honored and not ever seriously challenged. And there are solutions out there that can work and that can work for decades. Now, there needs to be more work done on this, but I've seen the union have a willingness to go hand in hand with the employers. And I think some individual carriers are better than others at wanting to do that and move forward. But as a Republican congressman said the other day, the unions on East and West Coast have agreed they're going to work on technology and move forward on it. But that's a partnership. It has to be employer and an employee. It has to be the union and the carriers together. That's the only way that's going to work. And it's important that we do embrace technology, because a lot of other ports are doing it in the world, and we need to keep up. We are a leader in so many ways. We need to also lead in that. Do I think the cargo is going to bounce back and move cargo movement? You know, we got these inventories that are interesting and weird right now. And, you know, I am not a pessimist, though. I think 2024, I'll predict, is going to be gangbusters. It's going to be a heck of a year. Now, how soon we start moving into the gangbuster part, I'm not sure. I'd like to see it at the, you know, the last quarter of this year, if not sooner. But I am not pessimistic at all about the idea of cargo movement. I think there's a lot of things happened. There's been some changes of attitudes, and I think we could start a little more on the collaborative model moving forward. I think that's going to be more helpful. But labor peace is a key. Companies that were moving around trying to avoid West Coast negotiations, I scratch my head and I think, wow, really? Is it all worth it? Because the price of labor on the coasts has not changed that radically over 50 years. You know, their piece of the pie for the wages is very similar to what it's been historically. So, and it's not like the carriers didn't do really, really well. I mean, I think they all have rooms full of money and treasure because they did that well. Billions in profits. What companies can say they made billions in profits? And I'm glad they did, except maybe they charged some people too much at times. But now that's going to sustain them moving forward. And okay. Well, they're concerned. And we here see a lot of carriers come to the office and talk to us. A lot of the marine terminal operators come to the office and talk to us. They want to know kind of where they fit. Their interests aren't necessarily aligned right now. They're all worried about detention and demurrage. And, you know, who's going to pay? Are we going to have weekends open or not? You know, can we charge demurrage on weekends? Well, open a gate right now and you can. So it's a... I was explaining this to my wife, and before I even got very far, she says, "What are you working on?" I said, "Explain to her about demurrage." And she says, she's a longshore wife, 10 years longshore wife, used to work for a maritime firm as a legal secretary, and says to me, "Ah, well, why don't they just open a gate and then they can charge demurrage?" And open a gate.
We're seeing that. We're seeing that with some of the terminals right now, right? They're in some cases closing week gates and then opening Sunday gates, which, you know, I think from the trucking community's perspective is, let's just work on consistency and communication, right? Because as you know, you could open that gate, but if you tell me on Saturday night you're going to have a Sunday gate, guess what? I'm not going to have labor there to be able to support it. I'm not going to have drivers. My customers at warehouse probably isn't going to be open. But when we work together and when we communicate, as a supply chain, we can do amazing things. And we do every single day. We literally put the American economy on our back and move it around, right? And, you know, I think the big thing is if we can move toward, my hope out of OSRA and my hope with this commission, because I'm so excited that you guys have the willingness to go do this, right? And I think that's the big thing. You've got a mission to help solve some of these problems. And a willingness, as it used to be said, oh, the FMC is a paper tiger. Well, you're growing teeth and claws. And I think that's a good thing, because as we're moving the economy and as we have so many different innovations and as we have so many process changes, we just need to make sure that the discussion is a fluid one, it's ongoing, and that we make the necessary changes to contracts and policies and agreements that mirror the way that the industry works. And, you know, that's what has been missing. And you get a lot of finger pointing. Oh, well, it's not me, it's the terminal. It's not that, you know, it's not me, it's the trucker. Well, if we all have a set of rules we can play by and we know them, and we have Big Brother or the adult that can say, guys, you need to play nice in the sandbox, we can continue to do amazing things. And not only can we have to, right? We have to step up, because we moved more freight in the last 2 years than we've ever moved in a 2 year period. But that's the norm in a couple of years, unless we have some sort of catastrophic economic event. And I don't think that's going to happen. So at least let's hope it doesn't. So the work you're doing is so important. You're helping the supply chain hopefully get to a common set of rules that everybody understands and can win by. And we know who can charge what when and when they can and can't, and how that process works. But I like to hear that you are very bullish on next year. You know, we're very hopeful that the second half of this year we'll see an uptick in a lot of freight, especially in some of the categories that are seasonal or are ongoing, like fast fashion and your everyday consumer good items. And going into next year, hopefully the questions that still need to be answered for OSRA have been, and we all go into 2024 knowing what the rules of the game are and how we need to play it.
Thanks, Weston. Wouldn't it be nice if people who work on the waterfront or related can actually plan and figure things out ahead of time and work together? I mean, that would, what a novel concept, but it's
mind-blowing.
So many missing parts that would need to not, that have no reason for not for being that way. And I appreciate you and speaking up at Cargomatic, from Cargomatic at the Cleveland National Retail Federation in 2022. And, you know, you guys, you know, you had a voice of practicality and reason about the supply chain when there's a lot of doom and gloom and a lot of fear mongering and a lot of inaccuracies that were being put out there. But you guys seem to have absolutely eye on the prize and a much a better read, I thought. And so I was impressed with you guys at that point in time. And so I'm glad we've followed up and look forward to your continued clear voice on our issues. So it's very helpful.
No, I really appreciate it, Commissioner. You know, our goal is, we have a very fragmented industry, and we want to do our part to bring it together, provide people with tools, provide a clear path forward. And quite frankly, we want to set the new standard for how the industry should operate, using technology properly, collaborating with partners, creating jobs, right? Moving freight faster and more efficient. Because we think that you should make money when you're moving freight. And we think that when you move freight, people get hired, right? And that's really what this is all about. We want to really thank you for coming on the show today. It's been an amazing conversation. I'm just happy to see you in Washington, D.C. It's great to have people that are part of the industry actually helping set the policy for how the industry participants are going to get to, you know, continue to advance how we do this. Really, from everybody at Cargomatic, thank you to what the FMC is doing as a whole, because at the end of the day, we all want clarity and we all want an equal playing field. And, you know, I think we have an opportunity to do that, unlike we have had in a very long time.
Right.
It's because of the hard work you guys are doing on the Hill.
We got a good agency, and we have a lot of congressional staff and members have gotten religion about cargo movement. It's about time.
Well, as always, I've enjoyed our conversation. I can't wait to get together again. I'll let you know when I'm visiting, and please do the same. Super. And everybody at Cargomatic, I'm Weston Labar. This was Commissioner Max Vekic on our latest episode of People on the Move. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.